So yes, as I said, we're going to be looking at the five spiritual faculties. I just returned last night from Spain. I was out there on an ordination retreat, up in the mountains. And of course, on an ordination retreat like that, people have been training for ordination for a number of years, and so the retreat for them is the culmination of sometimes 4 or 5 years of training, or in some cases 15 or 20 years of training, because some people take longer than others. And of course, a situation like that is a very special occasion for those people, and also for the people who are carrying out the ordinations. And what you're doing in a retreat like that is trying to set up the best possible conditions for people to practice meditation, to live in harmony with each other for the period of the retreat, which in this case was a one month retreat, which is relatively short for an ordination retreat, and setting up conditions for them to really deepen their practice and strengthen their commitment and their conviction in the efficacy and effectiveness of practicing Buddhism, of practicing the Dharma. And I was thinking just this evening, I was thinking about our Sangha nights, and I was thinking, well, in principle, actually, what we're doing on Sangha nights is the same thing as what we're doing on a retreat like that. Generally, Sangha night is attended by people who've been practicing meditation for some time, who are committed to practicing Buddhism, who want to go deeper with it, and so on. So what we're trying to do in the midst of our busy lives is create a little period of time where we've got conditions to practice, to go deeper and to strengthen our commitment and our conviction in our practice. And obviously it can't be as strong or as intense as a one-month retreat, but in principle it's the same thing that we're trying to do. And so what we're doing this autumn is we're going to look at this teaching of the five spiritual faculties as a way of trying to deepen and strengthen our practice and our conviction and our commitment. Maybe the first thing I should do is, in case you're not all familiar with the five spiritual faculties, I'll just write them up on the board. So as I'm talking, you have something to look at apart from me. So, wisdom, meditation, mindfulness, energy, and faith. So these are all obviously English translations of Pali and Sanskrit terms. Wisdom would be prajna in Sanskrit. Meditation is samadhi. Mindfulness, in Pali it's sati. In Sanskrit it's smriti. Energy is virya. And faith is shraddha in Sanskrit. Those terms because sometimes the English words have particular connotations for people, and it's good to remember that actually the teaching wasn't given in English, and it didn't then have the connotations that we might have with those of us who are brought up speaking English, at least. We might have with words like faith or wisdom or whatever. So one of the things about Buddhism, if you at all read Buddhist texts at all, especially the texts like the Pali Canon and so on, one of the things that you find is that it's full of lists. There's lists after lists and lists within lists. So it's like an enormous shopping list, as it were, of teachings. And there's a good reason for that. Obviously, lists were a good aid to memorizing, because the Buddhist tradition was an oral tradition for probably at least two centuries, not more. Well, definitely more, I'd say, in most cases. So in an oral tradition, having a list that you can chant and then having within that other lists to explain it is obviously a really good way of remembering things. And if people didn't have that, they would never have got written down and have been preserved. So the list was a really good way of doing that. And some lists are meant to be really comprehensive. They're meant to encompass the whole of Buddhist practice, the whole of the path, as it were. Other lists are just more detailed analysis of one particular thing. It's a bit like, you could say it's a bit like naming parts of the body. So you could say there's a torso, a head, two legs, two arms, that's it. You've described it. But that in a way would be a bit like a child's drawing, short on detail, but definitely recognisable as a body, as it were. Yeah? Or perhaps a more sophisticated list might be in terms of the different systems of the body, the blood circulation, the respiratory system, the nervous system, the lymphatic system, and so on. You could have quite a sophisticated list that would, in a way, encompass what the whole body was. But then you could have another list that was really detailed, that just described the hand and all the bones and all the nerves and all the veins and everything in one hand, as it were. Buddhist lists are a bit like that, a bit similar to that. There's some of them which encompass the whole of the path of Buddhist practice, the whole of the Buddha's teaching, in a way. So they're like headline lists, if you like. And then there are other lists which are just dealing with particular limb, you could say, or a particular aspect of the Dharma. So for example, there's a list, the threefold way, which is just ethics, meditation, and wisdom. Ethics, meditation, and wisdom. So that you could take that list and expand it, and you've got the whole of Buddhist practice in there, ethics, meditation, and wisdom. But like the child's drawing, it's comprehensive, but it's really short on detail as a list. But within that list, you could then have, for example, you could just take ethics, and you could describe that with the 10 precepts or the 5 precepts or whatever. And then the second precept, say, is about generosity. And then within generosity, you could talk about the 5 different ways of giving, or the 5 kinds of gift, or the 4 different ways of giving, and so on. So that's how the lists worked. They were aids to memory, which then aided you to remember another list, which aided you to remember another list. And each one is to do with actual practice. They're all about method and practice. And it's helping you to remember how to practice, how to do whatever it is you're going to do, whether it's meditation or generosity or whatever. But of course, it's important to remember that there is a whole body, as it were. There's a whole body of teaching, a whole body of Buddhist teaching. And it should be possible always to relate any list, however detailed it is, back to that whole body. If you can't relate it back to the whole body, then it's not really part of the body. Your handbag or your wallet is not part of your body. So if you could do a detailed description of your handbag or something, but you can never relate it back to your body because it's not part of it, however closely related you might feel to your wallet or whatever. And it's always worth noting or remembering that any list in this, every list in the Dharma, every list that's used as an aid to teaching, is a particular way of breaking down the whole, as it were. So it's just for convenience. It's for convenience of memorizing. It's for convenience of practice. And it's for convenience of understanding. So just as the body can be looked at in terms of limbs and organs and systems and so on, the Dharma can be looked at from different perspectives and in different ways. And all of the comprehensive lists, even if they're different lists with different terms, they'll all relate to each other or overlap with each other, include each other even. So these five spiritual faculties that we're going to be exploring over the next couple of months, these are a comprehensive list. This is one of these headline lists which is meant to include everything. And it's a very important list actually in the Buddhist tradition. In Pali it's called Pancha Indriya. And there's another identical list called the Pancha Bala. So pancha means five, yeah, and the indriya is, well, it's related to the god Indra, and it's something like a controlling principle or a ruling principle. So the idea is that if you practice the five spiritual faculties, if you practice wisdom and meditation and mindfulness and so on, that you come to embody them, and therefore they become, as it were, the controlling or ruling principle of your life. They will be how you respond, how you function in the world, how you naturally think, how you naturally respond. And when they're completely fulfilled by you, when you've completely practiced them thoroughly and embody them, they become the panchabala, the five balas. And bala means power, so the five powers. So this is an idea that occurs again and again in Buddhism, where you have the same list, but it appears, as it were, at two different levels. Yeah. So the first level is the level, you could say, of practice as a discipline. Yeah. So when you start out, and for many, many years possibly, your practice is a discipline. It's something you do in order to train yourself. So you're meditating in order to train your mind, or you're practicing ethics in order to train yourself to be more ethical and so on. You're studying and reflecting in order to imbibe the wisdom and try to embody the wisdom of the teaching and so on. And then at some point, as realization gradually dawns, as it were, realization deepens, the same practices become an expression of the realization. So they start out as a discipline, a practice in order to embody something, and when you embody them, then they become the expression of that embodiment. There's that Zen saying, something like, I chop wood, I draw water, before Satori. Satori being something like realization or insight. After Satori, I chop wood, I draw water. So exactly the same practices, but from a different basis and a different motivation. So for example, generosity Generosity can be a practice to help to develop the altruistic heart and mind, yeah? And generosity can also be the completely natural expression of an altruistic heart and mind. So it could be either the development of something or the expression of something. And from the outside, of course, no difference might be visible. It just looks like the same thing. Chopping wood, drawing water, generosity, whatever it is. So these five spiritual faculties and five powers, the same thing both as practice and as expression of realization, they're very comprehensive. And that's the case for quite a number of lists that you find in Buddhism. So you've got the threefold way I just mentioned. You've got the eightfold path, which probably is one of the most common lists. Or you've got the six perfections. And it's possible to correlate all of those in some way. So it's not an exact science. I did a little bit earlier on, just before the class, just to have a go. So for instance, the threefold path is Sila, Samadhi, Prajna, ethics, meditation and wisdom. The eightfold path has got right action, right speech and right livelihood, which are all about ethics. It's got effort, mindfulness and concentration, which relate to meditation, and view and motive, which relate to wisdom. The six perfections have got dana, generosity, Sila, ethics. So relating to that. They've got energy. Energy, you could always even put in different places, but it's energy is like effort. You can put it with meditation, but of course effort is needed whether you're practicing meditation, ethics, or wisdom, so you could put it possibly in all three. And kshanti, which is only in this six perfections list, means something like patience, forbearance, in a way, kind of perseverance. And it's in the tradition, although it's talked about as patience, in the end what it is to do with is it's being patient enough to bear with reality, as it were. Reality might not be what you'd like it to be. For instance, we all die. You might prefer that you didn't die, but being patient with the fact that actually that is what happens, or we all suffer or something like that. So it is in the tradition related to wisdom. The five spiritual faculties, faith or shraddha, is considered to be the kind of motivating force. It's what motivates you to practice. It's what motivates you to be ethical. It's what motivates you to meditate. And because it's what motivates you to be ethical, when you practice ethics, you experience joy. You experience delight. So faith in another list is said to give rise to joy. And that's the connection between faith and ethics. It's the motivating force. And then meditation, virya, and mindfulness and wisdom. So you can roughly correlate these things because they're all meant to be comprehensive lists. They're all meant to be lists of the full path of practice. But of course, it is always worth asking the question, are they really comprehensive? So, do they encompass the whole path of Buddhist practice? For instance, it's fairly obvious, compassion is not mentioned at all. In none of those lists, there's no mention of compassion. And surely that can't be left out of a comprehensive overview of Buddhist practice. Or can it? That's the question. Yeah. I think you could answer that question in two ways. You could say that they're not comprehensive because they don't include compassion. Or you could say, yes, they are comprehensive because compassion is not a practice in the same way. So the Dharma, the Buddha's teaching, that teaching arises out of compassion. We wouldn't have the teaching except for the compassion of the Buddha. And when it's practiced fully, it finds expression in compassion. So giving the Dharma, giving the teaching, is the great compassion, the Maha Karuna, the great compassion. And it's inherent in the Dharma that it can only be given. It can't be possessed. You can't own it for yourself. It can only be given. It can only be shared. So in a sense, the Dharma or the Buddha's teaching is synonymous with compassion. It's a bit like saying that the analysis of the body into parts or systems or limbs or whatever is not comprehensive because it doesn't take into account the fact that the body can move and act. Yeah, it's taken for granted that a living body, at least, is alive. Yeah, it's taken for granted that the living Dharma is compassionate. It is compassion. Mm-hmm. So that's one way of thinking about why compassion is not there. Another way of talking about it is that anywhere where you see wisdom mentioned in Buddhism, wisdom includes compassion. Wisdom is, again, synonymous with compassion. There's no wisdom without compassion. Just as there isn't really compassion in the sense of the great compassion of the Buddha without wisdom. So, as I say, this list is quite comprehensive. Bhante Sangha actually used this list when he was writing his major work, The Survey of Buddhism. He wanted to write about the whole of the Buddhist tradition, which is a vast topic, and he needed some way of organizing it into some kind of coherent picture. So he used the five spiritual faculties as a way of talking about all the different schools of Buddhism, all the different ways that Buddhism has developed in different countries and so on. I won't go into how he did that, but for instance, faith is connected with the Pure Land schools of Buddhism, or wisdom with the Prajnaparamita, the Majjhimaka, and so on. So there's all these different schools of Buddhism that are related to. He managed to use the five spiritual faculties as the organizing principle, as a way of making the whole of Buddhism kind of coherent. And one of the key things about the five spiritual faculties, one of the key teachings with the five spiritual faculties, is this idea of balance. It's the idea of balancing practices against each other. So you could see the five spiritual faculties as a linear path. So you could see it as a linear path going from faith to wisdom. So you're starting out with faith or some kind of conviction sense of direction which motivates you. It motivates you to practice, gives you the energy, if you like, to practice. And that leads you eventually, gradually, to wisdom. But in a way, a better way to look at it is as a kind of what we call a mandala, or a circle with a all of them happening at the same time. So rather than something going from A to B to C to D, they're all happening at the same time. And the idea is that there's a balance happening, or a balance that needs to happen. So meditation is balanced by energy. Faith is balanced by wisdom. Mindfulness doesn't need to be balanced. As a word of faculty that helps all the others to balance. So I'm going to say something like that faith is balanced by wisdom. Well, in practical terms, what does that mean? It means something like that if you're a very devotional type of person by nature, that you need to balance that out with reflection and study. Yeah? And if you're someone who really loves to study and reflect and think a lot, you need to balance that out with more devotional practice. In other words, something that more arouses the emotions and the imagination rather than just the intellect. Yeah. So it's the idea of balancing the intellect with the heart, you could say. Yeah. Or if you're someone who absolutely loves to meditate and you get concentrated easily and you have very positive, even blissful experiences in meditation, then what you need to guard against is self-absorption, self-centeredness, yeah, or a kind of refined hedonism. Yeah. So you need to act in the world to benefit others, and you need to work on developing an interest in others and an empathy with them. But then if you're much more an action person, if you're someone who loves to do things and loves to make things happen and be out there active all the time, then you need to balance that with turning inwards. Yeah, turning inwards in meditation to acquire greater self-knowledge, turning inwards in meditation to refine your sensibilities through meditation practice. And that way you become more effective in what you do. And if you're the one who loves meditating but you go out, in fact that helps your meditation because it moves you on from, as I said, that tendency to self-centeredness, which is a real danger for people who get into meditation as a thing in itself, if you see what I mean. So the only faculty, as I said, it doesn't need balance, it doesn't need to be balanced, is mindfulness. You can develop mindfulness as much as possible. There's no, as it were, no such thing as too much mindfulness. But it must be remembered that this is mindfulness in the Buddhist sense, from a Buddhist perspective, which is always rooted in ethics, yeah? It's rooted in what we call right view and ethics. So it's not mindfulness just as a kind of technique that you might learn on a weekend at your workplace. Yeah, it's mindfulness from the Buddhist perspective. And mindfulness in its full kind of Buddhist sense is the faculty that enables us to be aware enough to take the necessary steps to balance our practice. Yeah. I'm aware that I'm probably leaving you with more questions than answers, but what I'm doing tonight is just setting things up for 5 talks that are coming over the next 2 months, which will go into each one of these things in detail. So these are the 5 spiritual faculties, unless, as I said, this is what we're going to be exploring over the autumn. Not next week, as it happens, because next week I said that at the beginning that I've just been on an ordination retreat, and so there were two men from Cambridge ordained on that retreat, and just a couple of weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, there was a woman from Cambridge ordained also out in Spain at the Women's Retreat Centre in Cachavana, and next week we're going to welcome them back to the Sangha, so we'll have a big welcome back for them next week. But then the following week, we will start on our exploration of the 5 spiritual faculties. And we're beginning not with a talk, as we usually do. We're going to begin with an evening led by Sadaraja, who's sitting back there. His name, by the way, means King of Faith. And so we're going to start with an evening on faith. And he will be doing something to evoke the quality of Shraddha, or faith. And then on the 23rd, the week after that, we will have a talk on faith from Maitridharka. And then we will have other talks, wisdom, there will be a talk by Sarvatanyana, mindfulness, a talk by Amritabhani, meditation, a talk by Kuladipa, who's one of those new order members I mentioned, and Virya, a talk by Vidyasaki. And there will be other things happening in between the talks. So that's what's coming up in terms of exploring these 5 spiritual faculties. I noticed today, I was just happened to be upstairs in the room, and that these five spiritual faculties were written up on a board upstairs, so they're being explored on Monday night as well by the people doing the Buddhism course on Monday night. So that's quite a nice synchronicity. I didn't know that. Other events happening this autumn, just to let you know in advance, as it were, not until December, but the team from the young people's evening are going to take over Sanghamite for one evening, and we'll have some talks on, they'll talk about why I am a Buddhist. And Suryamani will be doing her usual winter solstice ritual in December as well. And funnily enough, one of our Sanghamites falls on Christmas Day, 25th of December, and I will be here. And if anybody wants to join me, what I'm going to do is I'm going to explore A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, and the Buddhist Dharmic lessons to be learned from A Christmas Carol. So there you go, that's a challenge for you.
Mince pies as well.
Huh?
Mince pies.
You're bringing the mince pies. Look, now you're bringing the mince pies. Fantastic. Anyway, so we have a rich feast in store for you, a rich feast of teachings, and sounds like possibly mince pies as well. So I think that's all I want to say this evening, just by way of introduction. What we'll do now is we'll have a tea break, and then if you'd like to join me, we'll do a threefold puja after a tea break. Yeah. Thank you.